USA Radio News.
Voters in five states, including Nevada and Wisconsin, are going to the polls today. Larry Sabato is a professor of politics at the University of Virginia. He says the latest move by President Trump in North Korea could be a game changer.
What was the complaint you heard frequently from Trump critics? He was bellicose. He would get us into a war. Mm-hmm. We were going to be fighting North Korea. Guess what? That's over. Whatever happens in the future, I don't think it will be as bellicose. So he's changed his image.
President Trump said the summit may not have even happened had it not been for this one person.
Otto Warmbier is a very special person, and he will be for a long time in my life. His parents are good friends of mine. I think without Otto, this would not have happened. Otto did not die in vain. He had a lot to do with us being here today.
Quick look at your numbers midway through the trading day this Tuesday. Currently, the Dow is up right around 10 points. This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
The Tony Awards bucked a trend when it comes to recent award shows. Here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes with more.
The Tony's ratings actually increased, which is unusual for award shows these days. The final numbers have, among adults 18 to 49, an 11% increase, and there was a 4% hike in total audience, reaching 6.32 million viewers. The 2017 ceremony was watched by 6.05 million, the Tony's smallest TV audience since 2012. In 2016, when the wildly popular Hamilton was sweeping the awards, the program did score 8.7 million. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Tesla announced it would be laying off 3,600 workers as CEO Elon Musk made a promise earlier this year that the company would turn a profit in the second half of 2018. And a quick look at your numbers today on Wall Street. Currently, the Dow is down just around 20 points. This is USA Radio News.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. 866-490-3991. 866-490-3991. That's 866-490-3991.
The deaths of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain are drawing attention to a public health crisis in America. That's called depression and suicide. Megyn Kelly today had Kevin Hines, who attempted to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge and commit suicide, but take a listen to what happened when he was waiting right before he was going to jump.
All I wanted that day was for one human being to see my pain and to say something. In particular, I had made a pact with myself that if one person says, "Are you okay? Is something wrong? Or can I help you?" I would have told that person everything and begged them to save me. The woman who did approach me with a smile on her face, with big blonde curly hair, I immediately thought, she's coming to save me. I don't have to do this. I don't have to die today. And she approached, pulled out a digital camera, and she said, "Will you take my picture?" And you guys, I had to laugh on the inside. She hands me her camera, and she literally posed for like 5 minutes. Like this pose, that pose, five pictures later. And I used to be angry about it, Megan. Because I thought nobody cares. But then I realized something. I think she was just trying to show me something beautiful as opposed to the pain I was in.
Hines also shares some perspective on how he thinks about things now.
What people don't recognize in the crisis of suicidal thinking is that your thoughts don't have to become your actions. If you can recognize every time I'm chronically suicidal. I think about it all the time. But I'll never die that way. Never. Because I never allow my thoughts to become my actions when they are negative.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, this is Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters, and we're going to get started in about 2 minutes. Today is the 12th of June on Tuesday. It's a little bit after 4 o'clock here in scenic downtown Flemington. They've asked me to, number one, do an intro to the weather and then the weather, so here comes the intro.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterd In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterd In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So here's our weather forecast. It's currently 78 degrees, and I think you're going to think it's pretty nice out there because it's not that hot. I'm really wondering if it's really 78 degrees. Now, it's 76 degrees. It's going to get to 78 today. I'm reading it incorrectly. Stay 78 overnight with a little thunderstorm. 78 going to 82 tomorrow and 80 overnight. And then on Saturday, it's going to be partly sunny with 84 and 87 overnight. And on Sunday, 91. Wow. And we don't have any rain in sight for the next 4 days. So what we're going to do today, we're going to do some odds and ends about real estate and the current market conditions. But first, I'm going to finish playing out a few of our paid commercials. Be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you...
Sabía que... De cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi and Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
So once again, it's Joe Peters with Coldwell Banker. I serve Hunterdon and Somerset counties. I'm going to give you a little intro to my background. I'm going to get started with our show.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So once again, Joe Peters, thank you for tuning in. And today's show, I had a guest cancel out, so I pulled together a few odds and ends that I thought would be interesting talking points, and that's what we're going to do for the next 45 minutes or so. First things first, there's an article I published this morning on my blog. If any of you are not familiar with my blog, you can go to jpeters.com, J-P-E-T-E-R-S.com, and on that site you will see on one of the upper tabs the word blog. And when you go there, you will see all sorts of articles. I publish something every morning, including my newsletters on the first of the month. This morning's article was the cost of renting versus the cost of buying in Hunterdon and Somerset counties. And it's very interesting because people for the last 10 years have been living, especially the millennials that had to get back on their feet and get their credit established and save up a little money. They've been living in mom and dad's house, and now it's time to go out, and they're thinking, I'm going to rent. They're sort of sticker shocked because, A, we don't have a lot of rentals, and then the few rentals that we do have gone up quite a bit since they've been in the market last. As a matter of fact, we're looking at rentals today. Historically, rentals have been about 25.8% of your take-home pay, and now they're about 28.8%. So they've gone up about 3% if you can find them. And if you looked at the same thing on the purchase side, purchase prices are about 21% of your pay, and they're now about 17%. So the question comes up, should you rent or should you buy? In a lot of cases, I can take, in most cases, I would say 9 out of 10 cases, if you're going to go out and rent a $1,500 apartment, I can find you that apartment and allow you to buy it for less than a $1,500 a month. And you've got a lot of things going on. You're building some equity. You own your own place. You don't have to move out on anybody else's schedule. And we've proved it over and over again. There's three or four things you need before you can buy a house. One is you need a job. Number two, the job that you have needs to be a decent paying job. It can't be minimum wage, because what we take a look at is your gross income. And we say if your gross income is more than 30%, let me say that backwards. If 30% of your gross income is the rent or the purchase price, we can help you buy a house. So let me put that in round numbers. If you were to earn $50,000 and you divided that by 12 months and you multiply that times 30%, it'd be about $1,250 a month you can afford. You can afford that for rent, or you can afford that for purchase. So that's the first thing you need to do, is have a job that pays you enough that will be able to afford the house you want to buy. Number two is you've got to have some decent credit. And the credit scores today, as long as you're clearing somewhere in the 675 level on your FICO, we can get you into a FHA mortgage. If you get up into the 7.25 range, we can get you into a conventional mortgage. Now, FHA means it's a higher risk, so you're going to pay a little bit more, where conventional means it's right from a bank, it's not from the government, and you can go to pick a bank, TD Bank, any of the savings banks. You can get a mortgage there. You're going to need, for every $1,250 you pay in mortgage, interest, taxes, and insurance, and homeowner's fees, you're going to need to earn $50,000 or a part thereof. So still not that easy. So you need a job. You need some credit. You need a little bit of money. What we say is probably 3 to 3.5% down. You can get a conventional 3% down with decent credit. You can get an FHA with 3.5% down. And on top of that, you need some money to close with, which is probably another 3%. So figure you need 6% cash altogether. You can get that as a gift from parents. So if you were to buy a $150,000 house, which is probably a one-bedroom, maybe two-bedroom condo, you could buy that at 6% down. 1% would be $1,500, so it would run you about $9,000. That $9,000 could come out of your savings. It could come out of your gifting from parents or relatives, or it can be financed into the price if you can get the place that you're buying to appraise for that total amount. So instead of appraising for $150,000, you'd have to appraise for $159,000. Historically, the choice between renting and buying a home has been a tough decision. Looking at the percentage of income needed to rent medium price places, which is 28% versus the percent to buy medium price houses, 17%, the choice becomes obvious. So 28% of your income to rent, only 17% of your income to buy. Buying costs significantly less than renting. And every market is different. Before you renew your lease again, if you are leasing already, find out if you can put your housing costs to work in a better fashion this coming year. So I help a lot of people do that. And when somebody comes along and says, I'm thinking about renting, I find out where they want to live, I find out what it is they're thinking about renting, condo, townhouse, single family, I price out where they're going to be, and then I price out what it would cost to buy the same place, and I show them the difference. And in most cases, it's less to own than to buy. I'm sorry, less to own than to rent. As long as you've got a decent paying job, your credit built up, and a little bit of money put away. So that's one subject. A lot of things going on. So what I've just pulled a few out that I thought would be interesting. We talk about the American dream and home ownership. Any realtor will tell you that the home ownership is an integral part, maybe the most important part of the American dream. Hence, any threat to home ownership, whether it be high interest rates, which we're starting to bump into a little bit, a lack of inventory, which we're definitely bumping into a little bit, is a threat to the American dream. And recently, the CEO of California American Realtors and one of the sharper tools in a real estate shed, I love that term, delivered a talk at the directors entitled The American Dream Up in Flames, Why Home Ownership Really Matters. He offered a plethora of studies and statistics that showed how individuals and families who own homes fare better in life than do those who do not own homes. Moreover, the survey showed that 53% sampled thought that owning a home was a very important part of the American dream, and 18% thought it was the most important part. But please don't get me wrong, he said. My wife and I are residential realtors. We've been in the marvelous business for more than 40 years. The psychic and emotional rewards of helping people obtain a home are rich and appropriate. Moreover, it's certainly not my place to dismiss anyone's dreams. But the American dream is a phrase with a history, meaning that we do well to keep in mind it is much more than home ownership. Indeed, as home ownership may not even be a central part of that dream. A historian said that the American dream, in his 1931 book, The Epic of America, and he was John Truslow Adams, the American dream is of a land in which should be better and richer and fuller to everyone, the opportunity for each according to his ability and achievement. It's not, he wrote, a dream where motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream where of social order in which men and each man and each woman shall be able to obtain their fullest stature that they can attain and be recognized by others where they are regardless of fortuitous circumstances of birth and position. In other words, you can go from nothing to something, or you can go from something to even more something. The Essence of the American Dream, land where effort could be better one's condition and one's children could live there better than their parents. And I think that is the true American dream. Moreover, the potential of doing so should not be restrained by government or one's class status. It's the dream that drew millions of people to our shores, and it still does. To put in more modern and certainly less emotional terms, the American dream is the possibility of social mobility, where we ask how the American dream is faring. We ask, how does socialism move you? The answer is, it depends on who you ask. that's an interesting phrase. There are articles upon articles where we tell you that because of significantly less likely that a wage earner can move up in the American ladder, a July 2016 Atlantic article cites a study which measured given workers' chances of moving between groupings of 10% during the two periods, one from 1981 to 1996, and the other from 1993 to 2008, they found quite a disparity. The probability of moving up from where you are has gone down. No one seems to have be sure what caused this, but increasing inequality is often cited. In the presence of increasing inequality, the authors concluded, falling mobility implies that the rungs of the ladder have moved further and further apart. Moving between them is becoming a little more difficult. On the other hand, there are plenty of those who see the dream as alive and well. Writing in the National Review in May of 2017, Scott Winship claims, it seems likely that when it is said and done, 70% more of today's 30-year-olds are better off than their parents were at the same age. The state of the American dream is important. We do not pay attention to it. But home ownership is nowhere near being the central component. For money, ownership of a home may be consequential, and having lived the dream, I certainly doesn't define it. So I think what he's saying is it's not just home ownership, but take it back to that rent versus buy. If you rent, you're paying somebody else's mortgages. If you buy, you're paying your own mortgage. Several things happen when you own. One is you live where you want to live. Two, you live under the rules you want to live under. And three, other than maybe some homeowner association rules, three, you can live there till you want to not live there any longer. Where in rentals, you're going to live under the landlord's rules. You may have the same homeowner association rules. But there may be a point in time where the landlord doesn't want to rent anymore. It's time to sell it. You got to get out. Time one of the kids are coming back from college. He's not going to really lose your lease. When you own your own home, not an issue. So I think if you're thinking about home ownership and you're thinking about renting, you need to talk to a realtor like myself who can show you the differences and patiently sit down and work with you and show you what your options are. It is definitely less money, less percentage of your gross income to own than to rent, almost by a 3-to-2 ratio. And at the same time you own it, you get some tax deductions. Now, the new tax rules change that a little bit, but everything that is interest or taxes or private mortgage insurance is typically tax deductible. So that's probably 3/4 of your payment. So if you're going to pay, let's take round numbers, $1,500 a month on a mortgage, 3/4 of $1,500 is somewhere around $900. And that is a tax deduction at the end of the year. And depends what your tax bracket is. If you're in a 30% tax bracket, you're going to get out of the $900 $300 or $400 a month increase in tax deduction. So it becomes a tax shelter. Now, there's an argument that because we just doubled the standard deduction, that's not as big anymore, but it's still there. It's still an important consequence to you. So I can't tell you how many people, when I take them out and we start talking about the house, and I say, well, I can't really afford much more than this. I said, well, how are you looking at your monthly payment? And they're just looking that the monthly payment is going to be $1,500 a month. And I show them that, look, and you've got to go verify this with your accountant and maybe your investment advisor, but 300 of the 1,500 is going to come back to you at the end of the year. So why not go down a hall to the payroll department and take $300 less out of your check? Doesn't make any sense to give the government $300 to hold for you that you're going to pay back in an income tax return with no interest. It's perfectly legal to estimate what your taxes will be and change your deductions so that you can have less money taken out of your check. Joe Peters, Coldwell Banker, 908-238-0118. If you're thinking about renting, we should be talking because there's a lot of consequences and there's a lot of advantage to owning versus renting. So let's go through the home purchasing process a little bit. The very first thing you do is you find a realtor, or some people go directly to for sale by owners, but they typically don't work very well, don't save you any money, and it doesn't cost the buyer a penny to work with a realtor. So like 93% of people go through a realtor and look for a house. Then they find a house and they put in an offer. Then we negotiate the offer. That's the price, what's included, the terms, the dates, things like that. Once that's all done, they go and apply for a mortgage, and then they get the house inspected at the same time on parallel tracks. But on the mortgage track, part of it is an appraisal. And we used to get a lot of houses not appraising at the price that people were willing to pay for it, which means you cannot get the amount you want to borrow. And it's not like the house has to appraise for 100%, but I'm only going to borrow 80%, so that's all I've got to appraise for. No, you're borrowing 80% of the 100, the house has to appraise for the 100. So it's a 150,000 condo we'll use for this example. It's got to appraise for 150,000. In today's housing market, where the supply is very low and the demand is high, home values are increasing rapidly. Many experts are projecting that home values could appreciate another 5% or more over the next 12 months. One major challenge here in the market is getting a bank appraisal. When the price is surging, prices are surging, it's difficult for appraisers to find adequate comparable sales, similar houses in the neighborhood that have recently closed, to defend the selling price when performing the appraisal for the bank. And they work independently for the bank. They're drawn at random by your mortgage company, and they go out and they appraise the house. Every month, the Home Price Perception Index and Quicken Loans measures the disparity between the homeowners who are seeking to refinance their home and what they believe it is worth and what the appraiser says it's worth. Because even if you're going to refinance, it's got to be appraised. If you're going to purchase or refinance. March of 2015 marked the first month in a three-year gap between what the appraiser and the homeowner believed the home was worth. The gap widened to 2.65% September 2015 and has consistently hovered between 1 and 2% through November and 17th. The chart on my site shows that the changes over the home price estimates over the last 3 years, homeowners note that even a one-third difference in the appraisal could equate to thousands of dollars that a buyer or seller has to come up with at a closing. But the good news is they're meeting more eye to eye. So let's talk what happens. You want to buy the house for $150,000. You apply for a mortgage for $150,000. You're going to put 3% down, 10% down, 20%, but you still got to apply for a mortgage on based on $150,000. The bank sends out an appraiser. He's qualified. He goes out and he views the house. He pulls three that sold just like it in the same area in the last 3 to 6 months, and he factors in a little bit that the prices went up since they sold. He'll take out a feature if one has a fireplace and one doesn't. If one's got a two-car garage and only has one, he adjusts all of those things, and he says the house is worth $145,000. If that's the case, somebody's got to come up with the $5,000. In effect, I've seen it happen three ways. If it's a seller's market, the seller can say to the buyer, look, there's nothing on the market. You're going to have to come up with the other $5,000. And sometimes they get away with it. If it's a buyer's market, the buyer can say to the seller, look, I can buy other houses. Yours is the house that didn't appraise. You've got to lower the price to $145,000. In most cases, I see the two parties pull together and split the difference in some way, shape, or form. It's not always right down the middle, but sometimes it is. So that's the appraiser factor. It seems like only a little bit of money, but to a person that's buying $150,000, 3% or $4,500 or $5,000, it's a lot of money. So everything is relative, and it has to be resolved before you can complete the mortgage process. I've got a few other articles here. One is about safety tips. One is creating the perfect home office. One is home seller staging. That's an interesting one. It says, what is the home seller staging hiding from you? Now, what staging means is you take a house that you're living in, but before you sell it, you as the seller bring in a stager, and that stager probably takes some of the furniture out that's there, has you paint the walls a neutral color, maybe put a few throw carpets in, brings in a few pieces of furniture, and the place looks like great versus meh. And especially if it's a guy-owned house. I mean, men do not have the creative capability that women have in decorating a house. And I've seen this where guys live in a house for 10 or 12 years. There's not a picture on a wall. It's pretty dingy. It looks like an army barracks, and he's going to have a tough time selling it. So we get into staging. When a seller staged their home, they're simply trying to make their homes more attractive or as attractive as possible to the buyers. Staging can include cleaning, decluttering, depersonalizing, decorating the home. It can be done by either the seller or a professional. And at best, staging helps the buyers see the possibilities so they can easily visualize themselves owning and living in the home. It can distract the buyer's attention from real problems that a home may have, or that may be expensive for the buyer to handle. There's nothing wrong with a seller presenting the home at its best, sparkling, clean, and ready for viewing. But before you let yourself be enchanted by the romantic table for two, the aroma of cookies coming from the oven, and the spa robe and slippers laid out by the bathtub, ask yourself if those things that you should be noticing. Instead, concentrate on the things that will impact your daily life, how the home flows and functions, whether the home needs expensive repairs or updates, or buy all new furniture in order to make it work. When you view homes for sale that are staged, ask yourself the following questions. Does this home look too decorated? A sure sign that a home has been professionally staged is if everything in the home is generic furniture and has a store look from the same manufacturer or era. If you see no signs of wear or stickers under the vases and glassware, then the home is probably dressed to impress. That kind of perfection isn't achievable for most people, so don't look at the decor. Look at the bones of the home. And I got to tell you, the bones of the home, the basic skeleton of the home is what's important. Does the staging make sense? When you're really putting your own furniture close to the fireplace or as far away as the window, an attractive but odd arrangement is a tip-off that the room is either not well-designed or that a problem is being minimized. For example, a heavy chair may be used to discourage buyers from lifting the area rug. I've seen that happen. If the staging hides a repair that needs to be made, is it hiding a repair that needs to be made? Bathrooms and kitchens are the most expensive rooms to repair and update. Move the bottle of bubble bath and look behind the shower curtain. Is the cork fresh? Is the porcelain in the tub well sink, porcelain tub or sink stained? Is the finish worn on the fixtures? Look under the sink for water stains. Your inspector's going to do this too, but you're the person that's going to buy the house well before the inspector comes in. Is the staging overdone? Candles burning in every room, tons of air freshener, maybe hiding pet odors. Heavy drapes may cover up ugly views. Go ahead and open them. Take a look outside. If the furniture Is the furniture proportionate to the rooms? Smart scale finishings can disguise rooms. Furnishings that are too small. And go ahead and sit down with your knees under your chin, and a room may be too small for your purposes. Furniture that measures that's massive can mean that the room is going to be difficult or very expensive to decorate. If you like a home well enough for another viewing, and make an offer, ask the seller to leave the air freshener or move out the heavy chairs. Take measurements, make sure your things will fit in, get the home inspected so you know what you're really buying. Now, I find that the real true test is, and I ask my customers when we sit down as buyers to make this up in advance, what are your needed to haves? These are must-haves. And they can be things like, I have to have 2 bedrooms, 2 baths, or at least a bath and a half. I have to have a garage. I have to have an attic. I have to have first floor this. I have to have a cooking kitchen. My wife likes to cook. Those are have to haves. Like to have. So I'd like to have a pool if it came with it. Probably doesn't change the value very much, but takes up half the backyard. I'd like to have a finished rec room. I'd like to have a slider to the backyard. But the have to haves are different than the like to haves. And you really need to, when you go through, not get your vision re-engineered by the way a person has staged a house, because a staged house is made to look very desirable but may not function for what your must-haves must be. So another thing they we talk about is perfect home office. If you're looking for a home and you want to make a home office out of it, these are the things that I think you need to keep in mind. I work out of my home. I do 90% of my work when I'm not face-to-face with a customer. I'm in my home. And my home has a bedroom dedicated as an office, and that bedroom is in a quiet corner of the home. And it gives me a view. I can see if it's raining. I can see if the mailman came, or mailwoman in my case. It works for me. But you've got to look at works for you. So first things first, home offices are one of the most inmost demand features today and continue to rise in popularity as more and more people are working from home. They found that 2/3 of the companies today have remote workers, and this is the company that did this study. And my phone rang and I'm trying to shut it off. There we go. It's off. 2/3 of the companies today have remote workers, and according to Forbes, more and more Americans are quitting their day jobs and starting their own business, especially when they're finding equity in their existing home. But creating a home office that functions takes more than dragging out an old desk and out of the garage and finding a dining chair to sit on. The right elements can help you work better and more efficiently. First things first, the right spot. I think I hit on that. You don't always have the option of choosing the location of your home for your office. You may already have dedicated space, but when you're choosing a few locations to consider from, you're likely to spend many hours in your home office, so don't stiff yourself on space. You're squishing to a tiny desk with a windowless closet to preserve rarely used guest room. Doesn't make much sense. Also, consider traffic flow and your ability to withstand distractions. Do you work best in the thick of activity, or should your office be tucked away in a quiet space? If clients are stopping by, a private space is ample for seating. That's a must. The right to privacy. Even if you say keep the door open type, having your door you can close when you need to is a mega concentrate issue, and take phone calls is the key to creating function of a home office. If your home doesn't have a dedicated home office space and there isn't a bedroom that you can convert, a dining room may be your best bet. Many families today don't use their dining room, especially if there's a breakfast nook or an island or an eating bar. Adding glass doors to that room can give you some privacy. The right chair, I mean, that speaks for itself. if you aren't sitting in a right chair for hours and hours, you're not going to be comfortable, and you're going to be standing and walking and circling. The right colors, these also blend in. Right storage. I know in my home office, I have a double closet. It's a third bedroom, and I have a double closet, and I always need more room for supplies. It's amazing what your office will collect on you. You're going to need some paper, some ink. You're going to need some envelopes. You're going to need some file cabinet space. You're going to need pens and pencils and rubber bands and paper clips and on and on and on and on and on. Little discs, little thumb drives. You're going to need and then it needs the right mix of personality. Sure, your home office is a professional place where important stuff gets done, but don't forget to put a little of you into it. Studies show that you work better when you're surrounded by things that make you happy. Most corporate offices don't allow you to do this, but you might have a family picture on your desk, but not much else. At home, you really have a lot of liberty to decorate it any way you like. The right light, very key. Lighting is essential. I know in my office I use a couple of desk lamps, and I use a keyboard lamp, and I use a desk lamp, and I keep the overhead light off. That's the way I like to work, but other people like lots of light, and that's a key item as well, and then the right supplies. Home offices are tax deductible. It's a little bit of an understanding factor. If you're using a portion of your home and it's dedicated to your home office, let's say you have seven rooms and you take 1/7 and say that is my home office, there's a whole set of the rules you've got to comply with in order to deduct it as a home office space, but it is doable. Where I come from, I think my training always was that it's a red flag. It's one of those tax returns that are going to look at twice instead of just once. Maybe that's old school thinking, but I've never claimed my home office. But I do take part of the electric and heat, and I claim that as office expense, and that is perfectly legal to do. And I do take part of the internet and part of the – I have dedicated phone lines for my office. If in my business, you have to have a personal line or else you can't use your business lines as business only. And I've set all of that up, and your accountant can help you. Now, I'm a real estate agent. I can tell you what I think is the case. In all of these cases, you need to go talk to your accountant and make sure that is the case for you, because you don't want to get down 3 years into it and find that for every year you've done this, you owe the IRS a couple of $1,000, and then it's like, oh, somebody led me in the wrong direction. I can't give you accounting advice. Only your accountant and your tax advisor can. But it's one of those things you want to make sure you understand before you start deducting your home office as a dedicated space as an office. I just deduct the expenses. Risks of smart security devices and how to avoid them. We're seeing more and more of this stuff, right down to Alexa. If you're current or prospective smart homeowner, if you are a current or prospective, then you know that there are potential threats associated with automated home. There are tons of different smart security technologies for your home, such as security cameras, smartphones, integrated appliances, each of which has its own set of risks. Due to their advantage technological features and data capabilities, smart homes are vulnerable to hackers and other forms of theft. Here are some of the different risks that smart security devices pose. Now, you never had this problem when you worked in an office. You probably still could be hacked, and you probably could still do some of the things I'm talking about. But now you're at home on your computer, and your computer has to have, from the internet, a firewall so nobody can get on it with you. And then your files have to be encrypted and stored in a cloud, so you've got them backed up in case your computer – there's all sorts of things. Let's start with security cameras. Installing security cameras in and around your home is a great way to keep an eye out when you're away and to help discourage potential trespassers. However, older models and less technologically advanced security camera systems can pose a major risk to homeowners. This is due to the fact that the outdated camera system can be easily hacked due to lack of authentication and or encryption, which means your security camera and footage can be intercepted by hackers. Once filtrated into your security system, hackers can steal your information, trigger false alarms, and disarm your system completely. For your protection, the best stay up to date on the newer systems. For example, many of the more advanced security cameras on the market today use fingertip recognition and facial recognition in order for you access to camera safe security. Newer security cameras have 24/7 live remote streaming, motion detectors, alerts. They're really getting there. If your camera system's more than years old, it's outdated. The security people tell me this. I meet them a lot on new homes, and they're saying that if you still got a wired security system, forget it. If you got a system that was more than 2 years ago, it's dangerous. Door locks and doorbells. You see these all the time on TV. Smart door locks and video doorbells have become increasingly popular, and they double as security cameras. With smart door systems, homeowners can both see and speak to their guests or intruders before unlocking the front door. In conjunction with the security system, smart doorbells and locks are added another layer of security for monitoring activity outside your home. However, most people think that because they have multiple smart security devices, the home and data are impenetrable. That's an easy one to say, impenetrable. But hackers can still breach your system by using malware and get access to your PIN code and front door. It's important to always keep your systems updated with the newest software versions and to change your passcode every so often. Other risks. Smart homes owners typically turn to smart security devices to protect what's inside their home from being stolen. But it's critical to consider other types of theft that can happen. Smart technology can be effective for home security, but it also opens up the room for data breaches, personal information leaks, and other cyber security issues. This is because smart home devices are connected to the internet, but lack of protection from information hackers and cyber thieves. They lack that protection at times. Consider the big picture and protect yourself from having by investing in identity theft protection. Also, I think another thing you may want to do is just get assurance policy and minimize the overall risk by being proactive. I can tell you that it does not take a lot to go and get a security assessment done on your home. Once again, I talked about when the internet is coming into your home, you want to have a firewall so that nobody can get into your computer and hack it. Now, that firewall can be on your router, it can be on your each computer, but it's probably more than you want to try to understand. It's bigger than a bread box, as I said. And I'm fairly technical. I hire a guy, and I probably pay him in the course of a year $400 or $500, and he does my security for me. It's a good peace of mind. I know that my data is backed up. I know my data is not stored locally. It's an encrypted cloud. And I know that my firewall is in place, and I know that everything I need to be secured is secured. On top of that, you probably want an identity theft protection plan. They're like $20 a month. There's a bunch of them available. And you probably also want an insurance policy, just an overall umbrella insurance policy to cover you from liability. So let's say I'm a real estate agent. I've got a person's contract on my and some of his data. Like he may have sent me his bank authorization letters that he's authorized to make a home offer. If somebody was to hack into that, in effect, I could be sued for it. So I keep insurance so that if that was ever to happen, even if all the security I have, sort of a belt and suspenders, that I've got an insurance policy on it. The other thing, computers, I don't care where you are, what model you're at, Apple, Honeywell, whatever, IBM, Microsoft, they're going to stop working. it's like everything else in the world. Everything has a life expectancy. And you want to make sure that when your disk drive, for example, reaches its life expectancy and you hear this screeching sound coming out of your computer, that you've got that data backed up somewhere else. You may have backed it up as of last night, and you may have put all today's transactions into a log file so you can restore the file and bring it up to date. You may have it backed up as of the last keystroke, but you need to have a backup. Hire a professional. This is not for the meek. This is not something you can pick up and do yourself very easily, and this is something you definitely need to have. I'll give you just a great example. You've got a laptop. The laptop has your whole presentation and all your files on it. You're going to a customer's site. You stop at Dunkin' Donuts, you leave the car open, you come out and the laptop's gone. What are you going to do? You need protection for that. In my case, there's no data on my laptop. The data is in the cloud and it's encrypted, and only I have access to it. And when I put it in a cloud, I know it's in multiple places at the same time. So even if the location in the cloud goes up in smoke, I've got backups to it. You got to think like that. And if you're sitting at home and you spill a cup of coffee into your CPU, we've all done it. And you see smoke coming up, same thing can happen. You've got to make sure you got this thing, these things protected. So I'm going to go through one more item, and this is more from the seller's viewpoint. Home improvement projects that will last long periods of time. That means it's going to take a while to do them. Thinking of remodeling your home? Before you splurge on a finished basement or a new kitchen, make sure that you choose a home improvement project that will add to your home's lifetime value. Check out the remodel magazine's cost versus value projects and the highest return on investment. Free home improvement projects we like are getting a new roof. Although adding a new roof isn't as exciting as a new modern kitchen, it's going to improve the value of your house. And I got to tell you, when we get to end of life on roofs, it's usually an expensive thing. If you were to get a new kitchen instead of get a new roof, I can tell you that let's say you put a $50,000 kitchen in, it's probably going to add $25,000 to your home's value, and the next person's not going to like the way you did it anyway. So I think a new roof, if you need a new roof, is something that you're going to require at closing anyway, and it's going to add to the value that the roof is newer. But getting a new kitchen, yes, your house may sell quicker, but if you haven't used that kitchen for a few years, it's not an investment I'd make at closing. Change out your front door. The door is the focal point of the home. It's the first thing that guests and visitors see when they come to your house. Adding a new door to your home can significantly boost its curb appeal. And in fact, if you're planning eventually to sell your home, Remodeling Magazine found that a steel front door can recoup over 100% of its value. However, if you plan to spend a little more time at your home and you're not looking to sell, you can enjoy the perks of having a steel door. One example, steel doors make your home more energy efficient. Most steel doors have a magnetic Weber stripping that seals nicely around your door, and a steel door could easily customize so you decide to repaint your home a new color, the door is going to match with a coat of paint. Installing new floor. Wood flooring can last up to a century, and it really does. I have a guy that recovers wood under the water in the Amazon, and it's amazing that wood underwater doesn't get rotted. It's recoverable. It's classic. It can fit a wide range of different styles and designs, from modern to historic homes. Keeping wood floors like new doesn't take much work. Little elbow grease and the right cleaning solutions is all it takes. And by taking extra precautions, you can preserve the wood's integrity too. Decorating the runners. So wood probably cost you twice what a carpet would cost. But when I go into a person's house and I look at that house for the first time and they're thinking about listing it for sale, floors is one of the big things we look at. I always go through the list of the things. The three things that are going to make people turn on to your house, and in this order are curb appeal. If they can't see their friends driving up and having a wow factor, they're not going to buy your house. If they think, well, the inside's nice, but I don't like the curb appeal, they're probably not going to buy your house. Curb appeal is important, and curb appeal is not as expensive as it sounds. It may be some shutters, it may be some new steps, it may be cleaning up the outside, maybe cutting away some of the shrub that is overgrown and encroached onto your property, and maybe taking the first 10 feet of branches down so people can see your house through the trees that are in front of it. Curb appeal, if the people pull up and can't see themselves living in your house, I've seen people just pull away and call a realtor and say, I'm sorry, we decided not to look at the house. That's number one. Number two is kitchens. Kitchens are important. And if your kitchen is dated, you've got to make compensation for that in the price. If a house down a street sold for $50,000 more than yours and had a brand new kitchen, well, then you probably need to take half of that $50,000 off, if not all of it, because the kitchen is a key item. And a third is bathrooms. But the caveat here is, if your house needs a new kitchen, I wouldn't spend the $50,000 before you sell it to put the kitchen in. As I said before, A, you're only going to get half, maybe 60% of that back. And two, the person who buys it probably would have preferred to have it a different way. You would have been better off giving a credit at closing for a new kitchen and lower the price. And your realtor can help you do that. Bathrooms the very same way. My name's Joe Peters. I'm going to play my commercial one more time, and I'll be back on next week with some more tips on real estate. I appreciate you tuning in. Thank you very much.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
USA Radio News.
President Trump is set to arrive in Hawaii tonight around 10 o'clock Eastern Time, this after meeting yesterday in Singapore with North Korea's Kim Jong-un and coming together on an agreement for complete denuclearization of North Korea. But count Senator Lindsey Graham is one of the guys who is still cautious regarding this agreement.
I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm very pleased with President Trump thus far, but we've got a long ways to go. They've done this twice, and we can't let them do it a third time.
Meanwhile, Senator Rand Paul joined Fox News to talk about how he would entice the North Koreans to give up their nuclear weapons.
I would offer them the allure of trade with Japan and South Korea and us, and expanded trade with China, and the allure of what trade and commerce brings basically to a country. He has to know. He's traveled the world. His people may not have ever seen the great opulence that there is in South Korea.
This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE. 833-39-BIBLE.
One state's considering a new bill that aims to reduce abortions, as USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
The bill introduced in the Delaware State Senate would require doctors to offer to perform ultrasounds on women seeking abortions, or the doctor